this property.
I want to talk to Marco here.
Ah, okay.
We have their money, was that?
Yes, we do.
Did you get a good pump on?
It was done the same time as the one in Brussels Street, and the little pokey building.
So how much are?
Oh, I went down from,
So you had 16 feet of water, and pipe, no.
Shut it, one of the furniture.
Well, it ran out, it's been out, it's been out.
Okay, that's what I was curious.
And running, oh.
Well, 10, let's say.
And how long goes your pump?
About 115.
So you're going to check on recovery now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Beautiful, thank you.
Did you get that tank in?
Right.
Yeah, it's all done now, it's just finished up.
All right, Richard, you can start the meeting whenever you're ready, Larry will be late.
Okay, so we'll call the meeting in order, this is a regular meeting of the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission, Wednesday, October 19th, 2022. Join me in the pledge of allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Larry Wilby, Hardy, Ken.
Here.
Sharon.
Here.
Joe.
Here.
Richard.
Here. Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
Yes.
Could you guys turn that up a little bit, I can't hear very good.
I'll just talk louder.
Okay, thank you.
So I added some, two pages of information items for the port manager update and special meeting schedule, two of those, and then the action item E, the RV park main waterline change order number 3 will be change order number 3 and 4, and I gave you two new ones because the original one in the packet was wrong. So the ones you guys got that are stapled together are the new ones.
Okay. Any others? All right. Hearing none. Entertain it. Well, we have any declarations of conflict of interest?
No.
Okay. All right. Entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I make a motion to approve the agenda as written.
Second. And amended.
Oh. The amended, whatever Travis said, I wasn't paying attention to Travis.
So the motion is to approve the agenda as amended?
Sorry, Travis.
So, motion by Joe, second by Ken. Danielle?
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Sorry, Travis.
Approval of the meeting minutes for special meeting on Friday, August 9th, special meeting on Tuesday, August 30th, special meeting on Tuesday, September 6th, and a regular meeting on September 21st.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as written.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Public comments, we have two. Gary Hartung.
I want to make my comments on action item D, the key card system. Why is the port spending more monies on the commercial basin restroom and shower facility? It is my understanding that the bathroom and shower rooms were originally designed many years ago for usage by the local commercial fishing fleet and by transit boat members. As the pictures in your packet show, considering the time spent by the board and port staff, all suggestions and money spent to date have not rectified the transit and homeless problem at the building. Why is the port again going to spend $3,000 to $10,000 on this restroom for a possible losing cause? It appears like it would not be too hard for the vandals to destroy the keypads or security systems being installed and again gain entry to the building. Question. How many commercial fishing employees are using the port's shower facility after returning to the port? My thoughts would be that when the commercial fishing employees return to the port, they travel home to use their own bathing facilities and not the port. Has anyone surveyed the commercial fleet on the shower usage? Why is it necessary for a port to provide shower facilities for transit boats? I would think most of these boats in transit have their own onboard facilities, or they rent a room for extended stays. How many other ports of our size have showers and bathroom facilities designated for the commercial and transit users? I have looked at both the commercial woman and women's restrooms and shower facility. It's my opinion that it would be more cost effective to board up the entries into the shower room. I believe repair costs would be less by making the building a public restroom by eliminating the shower access.
Okay. Second. Comment is Don Griffith.
Don Griffith, 16045 Lower Harbor Road. I just came down to kind of gripe and moan and see if you guys can figure out some kind of a policy where you can get fishing equipment that sinks to high heaven away from neighboring properties. I've got a situation now where I've got fishing nets across the street from my parking lot and at my motel that serves tourists who don't want to smell rotting dead corpse smells. And I thought I had it taken care of. Apparently it's not. Still got a problem. I talked to Travis about it. Maybe you guys could formulate some sort of a policy where stinky fishing equipment goes maybe close to the shrimp plant or some other place where it's not going to cause an issue. That's kind of all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you. That brings us to the management report, starting with safety, security, and environmental.
So the month of September was suicide awareness, so that was what we discussed support staff and the resources. There were 7 incidences for the month of September, which brings the year total to 68. Security in the port came across 169 security issues for the month of September, bringing the year total to 1,390. Monthly inspections were completed for the stormwater pollution control plan, and I am also now the responsible party for the discharge monitoring report from DEQ.
So when you say you're the responsible party, is that with DEQ? You have to have a designated responsible person, so you're in.
So the reporting is still going to be completed, and we have a responsible party for the control plan. And Travis is the head honcho of everything.
My name just
there.
Moved up.
Yeah. Mine went right underneath.
Okay. Just a general question. Will that remain that way when the new manager comes, or will we rotate it back?
Be up to the new manager what he wants to do and what he feels comfortable with.
Okay. DEQ doesn't care.
They just need a responsible party, and I would have, if Gary didn't want his name on there, I still would have been a qualified person to be in there. So depending on what the new manager wants to do, you know, maybe he just wants to leave it that way and just let us handle that part, and we'll just report to him about how it's going. We'll just have to see how he feels about it.
Okay.
Or she.
Okay, any further questions? Comments?
I have a question on the person that says they fell in the water. Is there a police report filed on that?
There's not a police report. We have not heard anything.
I'm sorry?
No. No police report, and we haven't heard anything from anyone.
Thank you.
Okay, that moves us to the Harbor Master report.
All right. In the RV park, port called McLennan Excavation to confirm the October work schedule, which they did start on time. The flushing mechanism and the RV park restroom were replaced. CTR hit the roof of the RV park restroom while dumping the dumpster. The pictures and an incident report were made. Roofers LLC came out and they made the repairs, and CTR, we forwarded the invoice onto CTR, and they'll be paying that. RV park occupancy, 61%. In the marina, staff completed dock walks. Repairs included cleat tightening, water spigot leaks, and loose bolts. Replacement parts for electrical pedestals arrived and were installed. The replacement parts were due to the sea lion damage that occurred over the summer. Staff began work on the travel lift, washing and taping all hydraulic fittings. Corrosion has been an ongoing problem and has been suggested to clean and tape all the fittings. Long-term boats in our boatyard were moved to allow boat shop and more time to move his boats to a new leased area. Haul-out agreements and new rates have been updated and ready for port to resume operations of the boatyard. Boat launches, there was 1,027 boat launches. The second most we've had in the last 4 years. There's a lot of boat launches. Telehandler jobs, we did two, and there was four haul-outs. Commercial receiving dock, lease docks are operational with no new issues to report. Port's public hoist continues to be used and an asset for our users of the port. Commercial retail building, port continues to monitor the boatyard warehouse. No new changes to report. Staff has ordered material to replace the broken door at the back of the warehouse. This will be mounted to the outside of the building so that we do not impact the structure of the building. Maintenance crew completed 103 work orders for the month of September. Crew continues to address landscaping and fish station needs. Both basins were walked by staff and they identified any items that may need our attention. All outside operations are looking good. Office staff, all mortgage renewals were completed and sent out on time. Updates and QuickBooks were completed for boatyard activities. Update of the 1200Z permit was started with Aquarius Environmental. Updates included removing previous manager from all documents, apply new best management practices for dustless blasting, and change the company information to the Port of Brookings Harbor as the new operator.
Okay. Questions? Comments?
Very good.
All right. Move us to the financial report.
The end of the month, unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $463,849. Restricted cash and equivalents totaled $853,724, with total checkings and savings at $1,355,734. September profit and loss, total revenues from all funds was $408. Total expenses was $406,306. The net income for September was -$6,198. Revenues for Beach Run RV Park, $49,934. Retail was $57,003. Fuel dock was $132,084. General fund grants was $50,000, and marina was $58,901. Budget performance, the total income for all funds is at 26%, with general fund revenues at 28.2%. Total expenditures for all funds is 13%, with general fund expenditures at 23.2%. That's a lot of numbers. Any questions?
Questions or comments? A little surprised at the fuel dock. Why so much income from the fuel dock now?
Because when this was created, we sold all of our fuel and we hadn't bought it yet. That's usually why we have an income. It's usually so close that if we're on the empty side of our tank, that means we've sold and we're bringing a lot in, because when we purchase, the tables turn.
I guess I'm just curious, why is that much fuel would be sold in September? Seems odd to me, because that's kind of out of the window for fishing season.
there was a lot of tuna boats that came in and out. Remember, this was for September, and we had 1,027 launches. We sold a lot more gas than what we usually do. And due to the cost of everything being so high, these numbers seem a lot bigger. It's not so much a difference in how much we sold, but the sheer cost of it.
Okay. Questions or comments? Hearing none. Make a motion to accept the management report.
I make a motion to accept the management reports as written or as discussed. I'm just not into this today, guys. For September 2022. How's that going?
Okay. Okay, we have a motion in a second. Now?
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Brings us to action items. Action item A, the draft Bell & Whistle Mobile Coffee Lease Agreement.
So this lease reflects Site 31 in the RV park for a term of 6 months at $250 a month, as we discussed. And at the end of that, we will review how things went and choose to extend the lease or adjust the pricing at that time. Matt and Anna have looked at this and agreed to everything that's in it. They said it looks good to them.
Okay. And this was attorney reviewed?
Yep.
Yep. All right. Any comments? Questions?
I'll make a motion to approve Bell & Whistle Mobile Coffee Commercial Lease Agreement.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? So I would just comment that this is a new enterprise for the port to have these mobile sites, so let's hope this continues. And all right, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item B, sale of port property.
Okay, so the attorney drafted our purchase and sale agreement. I turned this over to Mr. Whaley. He has returned it signed. So with us returning, you know, if we decide to go through with this, we will sign it. And the only thing left that I'm doing at Business Oregon is sending is the release of their lien on all port properties, in particular to the tax lot, which they said will be no problem. I'm just waiting on that to get here.
Was there any discussion about the use of the funds from this staying with the port rather than giving them 80%?
Yes, I wrote them a letter, and Becky Bryant with Business Oregon came down here, and it's very hopeful that we will be able to keep this money.
Okay.
So it's still being reviewed, but we're very hopeful we'll be able to.
Make sure that the record's clear and everybody knows what we're talking about. We're talking about the piece of property that's located kitty corner from the office that's on that hillside. We've had an offer from Lloyd Whaley to buy that property. So we've reviewed all of the information there and have the sales agreement up and ready. So that's what we're contemplating.
Is there any limitations as to what he can do with that property?
No.
He can do anything he wants.
His property. I don't know. I'm not sure what it's zoned. I'm not sure what other restrictions there may be on it, but that's up to him to do with that.
Okay.
But we're selling the property as is.
As is. If you recall, that piece of property, at least in my history here, has been on the market for a long time. We had one offer which we did not accept, which was pretty low. We've also had to do an extensive amount of work there to clear it, because of a homeless camp or two that have been, well, were in there, which we've resolved, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the background on this particular piece of property. Okay. Any comments or questions?
I have one question. So in the motion, since the sellers part, they have you as buyer, do we need to put that in motion?
It's probably not going to hurt anything. Should probably be a good addition.
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
Okay, recommended motion. Motion to approve purchase and sale agreement with the Lloyd Whaley Trust dated January 3rd, 2014 for the sale of the property between Lower Harbor Road and Shopping Center Avenue, Brookings, Oregon, and allow Travis to continue with the process of sale and have Richard Heath, the president, sign the seller's document.
I second it.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? I would just comment that I don't take selling port property lightly, but there are, and we'll talk about another one here, we have some pieces of property that are kind of an appendage to the port that are not usable by the port. Or at least we haven't found a use for them. So I think that, whereas I'm generally not in agreement with selling port property, I think that some of those parcels probably would be better served than private ownership. And we can use the funds, if this works out, we can use the funds from this particular sale to help us with our match for Wood Street. Okay, with that said, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. And here's the next one. El Cazadora proposal.
Okay, so the new owners, Cindy and Javier, they were leasing the property from Ken Burtis. They recently purchased it, and Ken Burtis, we terminated his lease with us. So given that they're still using the same piece of property, we drafted a lease for them. Now, they were paying around $250 a month for quite a while. The rate was never increased. I think from 2003 is when the lease started, and to date, they're still only paying about $250 a month. If we use our current rates, which is what I based this lease on and hit it, their monthly rate for 40 feet by 100 feet of asphalt would be $1,275 a month. I, of course, gave this lease to them, let them review it. They were quite shocked at the price increase. So they did write the board a letter with a couple different options. Did everybody get a chance to read it? One being a compromise on the rate that they were paying to what our current rate is, or if we would ever consider selling that portion of property. So this is time for us to discuss it, see if we're going to go with the original terms in our lease at our current rates, or if there's any adjustments we want to do or look at selling that piece of property.
So based on the diagram you gave us here plus the record, it sounds to me like this is a piece of property the port has owned that was paved by the leasee.
Yes.
Specifically for parking for a business. And if the port were to retain this, we'd have no real use for it other than parking. And the where it's located, it would be kind of difficult to use it for many port functions that I can see. It's much more naturally situated to take advantage and be used by the restaurant than anything else. So this is one of those appurtenances that I was talking about that, you know, I don't know what value there is in hanging on to it other than a monthly lease.
Right.
I agree with you 100%, Richard. Sell it to them.
I don't believe in selling our property that's attached to what we have that we do use, but I would say that we provide a parking lot for the Catalyst restaurant, basically. We provide a parking lot for all the other businesses around here to go in and charge these people to jump that rate to $1,000. I can't buy into that. But they are getting an improved parking lot that their business depends on. I do think we should get a little bit more than $218, but I do think that $1,000-something is, considering what we're doing for other businesses, isn't really fair either. So I would go somewhere, $400 or something, because we still have to maintain it and over the period of time. That's my thoughts on it.
So you prefer to lease it and not sell it?
Absolutely. We just sold a piece of port property that is absolutely not to our advantage to keep. But down the road, we may, situation, they may go out of business. We may end up with that building.
I just want to make sure that you guys know that Casaports, where that building is not port land or port property or lease.
The building itself.
The building itself is not. So the parking, I'm just trying to make sure, the parking we do provide for all of our tenants and everybody that's here that lease buildings for us. But in this particular case, this building is not a part of port lease areas. This is private property over here. We just own the parking lot, that piece of asphalt right there.
So it's a 35 by 40 piece. 20 foot. Feet, right?
It's 40 feet by 100.
Yeah,
it's kind of a weird shape, but
like that.
And the motel uses that parking also, or if they choose to, they
do. Not exactly sure where the port, where the hotel and that business starts, but they're two different owners.
But it's one continuous driveway between the two buildings or businesses.
Out front, it is. Yes.
Yeah. I would rather lease it to them. Even at the 218, but I don't really want to see us sell more assets of the port.
I would agree. I think bump the rate up and retain ownership, in my opinion. Okay.
In 2018, that property was appraised, and it was offered to the owner at the time, but they decided to go to a month-to-month basis. For some reason, at the $218.67 a month, and it remained that way up till today. So, the board at that time did look at that property as one that we would ascertain getting rid of. So, I see no problem offering them the same offer, except maybe now we could have it reappraised since it's been a long time.
How much does the Catalyst pay for their parking spot? What I'm saying is that there should be a constant thing going on here instead of charge one over here and nothing over there.
The constant is that the port doesn't charge for any parking anywhere.
Okay.
We don't. The port does not charge for parking. The only parking that's left in an old lease is Tidelands, has four spots that it's tied in with this lease from many years ago. But anywhere else, the Catalyst, anywhere else, nobody pays for parking.
But remember,
our parking lots are that we have are for the businesses that are. For the business owners that are leased by the port, for that, in this case, we're providing a parking lot for a business that's not on port property. That's the difference we're at right now.
Okay, that makes sense.
That figure that you came up with was based on the basic ground lease at 37 cents.
Our asphalted rate at 34 cents
a square foot. And that's just basic.
That's just our rate that we have established.
So who would pay that?
I'm sorry?
Who would pay that normally? if we were going to lease, I mean, who would lease paved space?
We do have some leases that lease paved space as part of Zola's, I think, has part pavement or concrete. Pacific and Ocean Harvesters, where his storage area is, there's part of that asphalt and part of that concrete. We do have other leases that are with the beachfront hotel over there, and the restaurant and that big parking lot they have is poor property, and they lease that parking lot from us as well. They are in a much longer lease with a significantly lower rate. But that was another thing that was discussed in their rates when that lease was made. So we do have different lease areas. That parking lot would be the only one that we actually do charge for, but that parking lot's not for port patrons either. That's for hotel guests only.
I think you mean who else would...
Well, what I'm trying to get to to a distinction here about the difference between a lease for an existing business or facility versus somebody who just casually comes in and says, I want to lease 1,000 square feet of your parking lot for a fair or something. You know, that's, I think there's, I guess where I'm headed is I'm inclined, if we're going to continue this lease, to make it for much less than that for these people. But I don't want to get us walking off the edge here by saying, well, now we've established precedent, so you come in and negotiate with us on that 37 cents a foot, square foot. So I'm trying to make a distinction here in my mind of, you know, like the hotel and like this place where they're appurtenant to an established business and a facility of some kind versus just a general lease.
The numbers that we currently have are all over the place with asphalt leases that we have, it varies dramatically.
And that's because of long-term leases?
Because of long-term leases, the durations of the leases, what was put into the lease as far as, is there a CPI increase? Is there any type of increase? Is it a fixed rate? Some of our older leases that we have like that are written not necessarily in our favor. That's why we wanted to talk about this, because our lease rate, anything at asphalt rate at 34 cents a square foot, when you just look at what we're looking at by 40 by 100 at $1,200 a month, we just might want to look at what our current rate is and see if that's the right number to be using. It's a lot of money that we did. If for anybody or whatever they were going to do at 34 cents a square foot, that's a lot just for asphalt under your feet. So one thing we could do is we could relook at what our entire asphalt rate is and see, you know, maybe it needs to be adjusted, and then we're not, and then table this, keep them on a month to month until we iron out more of how we want to see that rate. But ultimately, you know, if any additions or changes to the leases are going to have to be done by you guys. So right now, this is what our current rate is. If we want to table it, we can look at our different current rates, or you have the ability to negotiate it to whatever you guys want.
Personally, I would rather look at the rate as opposed to, you know, just dropping different rates at different places for different businesses. That doesn't appear to me to be very equitable or fair. So it'd be my recommendation that we look at adjusting the rate and keep them on a month-to-month basis for the time being.
Okay, so is what we'll actually end up looking at is we're going to pull every lease that has asphalt incorporated into their lease so we can see before, you know, prior and current and anything that might be in between to make a good decision on it.
With the understanding that as if we establish a new rate, as those leases expire and they're renewed, then we apply the current rate to it.
Yep. Okay.
you need that in a, actually it's an action item, do you need that in the form of a motion?
You could make a motion that just says continue on a month-to-month while we,
review.
Actually, it's going to stay on month-to-month no matter what. We can just table it. We can just stay on month-to-month.
Well, since we put this in action item, let me make a motion that we, move that. We continue the current month-to-month lease with Cazadores for the parking area. And then that the port staff will begin to look at the current paved area leases in the port with the intention of developing a new lease rate for paved areas.
Yeah, and all. We can call the other ports and call around to anybody that leases any type of parking lots and see if we can find any other numbers that are being used anywhere else too.
Oh, I suspect Newport will have one because they have that big wine festival up there in one of their parking lots every year that takes up hundreds or thousands of square feet of space. So
I'll pull up as much information as we can and we'll talk about it at our next.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. One additional thing, not affecting the motion, but I'd like to know of any infrastructure, the four domes that's in that parking lot. Do we have any pipelines, anything that crossed through there? And that's all I have.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Yeah. Travis, where's the property line on that building? Is it that blue line?
Right up next to
me. Yes, that's what the previous lease.
So we got another rejection.
Without me going out there right to, it's surveying it, but it comes right up to the back door of that building.
Yeah, so we have another rejection.
Yeah, So this survey point is what it does is that it runs directly. I mean, that building and that line come right together and there's no distance. So if we, weren't to lease this and we were to take this property and they weren't to agree to the lease and we took this property back, I mean, essentially they wouldn't even be able to walk out their back door without, for property. So
when this building was built, wasn't it the understanding that the 35 or the 40 foot behind that was the property of Curtis at that time?
I don't know all the history of it, but I think at one time that it was thought that when that building was built, that their property extended that far. I'm pretty sure that's how it ended up right on our property lines, because that it was built.
Well,
however they did it back then, and
I
remember they
say the works. I know what went on this.
Well, whenever it was built.
Before we started with another Rigetti's, I think maybe we should think about selling that piece of property.
There's a required setback from the property line. I don't know what it is for commercial buildings, and most residential is 10 to 20 feet required setback, so obviously something happened there. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any further? Yes, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
I'm fine with that for now.
Richard?
Yes. Comments?
One comment that you as a board need to think about is while in the end term of going through this reviewing these rates is maybe establishing some kind of rate with the consumer here, the Cazadores, so that they know where we stand and not get hit on the blind side. Something you need to look at now. Even if it's nothing more than continuing with the $214 or whatever monthly rate that they've currently been experiencing. So if they have some idea.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to continue the current lease rate.
Okay, because it wasn't in your motion. That's why I actually said something about that.
Yeah, it was.
We can't hear you very good.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right.
It was in the motion to continue the current lease rate until such time as we can adjust or look at adjusting the lease rate uniformly. Okay, key card system. All Obviously, this is not the first time we've had this discussion about this bathroom.
It won't be the last.
So, like I said, we've had this conversation many times. We are at the point where changing the bathroom code no longer is effective. It immediately gets given out somehow, some way, and I haven't figured that out. The next step would be go to a key card system where each individual mortgage holder will get one or two or, you know, whatever they need assigned, but it goes, they have a system where it's logged into it and we know each person and their users and we track, you know, the coming and going of the users of the bathroom. So if and when we have a problem, we can start narrowing things down. Unfortunately, this is where we're at, but you can see in some of the pictures, you know, you put up signs, they wipe crap all over them, they break the doors. The needles are probably the biggest issue that our guys run into. They are just stuck in every places that you could possibly imagine, and it wasn't too long ago, we had one employee that did get stuck with one. Locking these down farther is the option that we're at, or limiting its uses.
What does that do with our lease for that little real estate office? Because that's the only facility that office has available for a bathroom.
I wouldn't necessarily recommend closing that bathroom down entirely. I would make sure that the facilities are there. The bathroom facilities are in reference to the number of parking spots, public parking spots that we have. So the bathroom with the parking that we have that we allow for public parking has to remain open. The showers, however, are the driver of what's happening there. With the traffic, so if we look down the option of closing down the showers to make them not usable, we could look at that and see if it deters people from coming and going before we spend the money on something like that, or we keep the showers and go to something that's more secure. I'm at a loss right now what to do, too. What we have right now isn't working.
We have no problems on the other side, right?
Relatively no problems anywhere else in the port with the bathrooms there. This one by far is the worst.
Really super simple. Get someone there. Put a block wall up where the entrance is to it, seal that whole section up. They can't sleep in there, they can't shower in there. Done. A simple one, Travis, not a permanent one. The one that, so 5 years down the road, you decide to change it, pop the wall right out, you know, a temporary wall, no big deal. If you put a door there, you're just going to rip the door down so they can, as you see. So let's put a block wall up there and call it good.
Put a chain link
gate
against it.
I'll put a block wall up there in 4 hours.
That's limiting the use. Now, maybe you guys can help me remember. That bathroom and showers, is there anything I'm going to check with Oregon State Marine Board, but is there any other reasons why we have to provide those that you guys can think of?
No. I'm not sure we have to provide a shower.
Wasn't that provided by the federal government? That's
State Marine Board.
Actually, I think you're wrong there, Mr. Eves. I think the bathrooms were originally in a contract in 1973 when the port was built, provided by federal money, that four bathrooms be placed there, and shower facilities, if you look into it, to the public.
Well, the last inquiry we had about this was to the State Marine Board about putting the lock on the door. That was the issue, and that's where we went for guidance, was to them. And they said as long as it's use is intended for the boat basin, we could do that as long as boat basin people had access. So that was the decision that we made when we put the lock on the door, and it was based on guidance from the Marine Board. If this was built with federal funds, then I don't know about that, but I do know the State Marine Board has some interest in this. What it is, I don't know.
I think the funds came from the State Marine Board.
No, you're saying it was the State Marine Board that we talked to, and they were the ones that said that limiting access was fine as long as there was access still for the intended users. Now, we haven't updated them at how us keeping them open and available to the intended users is going. So pending on the decision that we make will depend on, you know, it's not going to necessarily get closed today. If we decide we want to close them, we're going to do a little bit more homework to make sure that it's okay and then come back at a different meeting to officially close them, given what information we find out and if that's an in fact doable situation.
Are you aware of how much use they get by the commercial fleet or intended party?
The showers?
Zero.
I don't think that those showers are used by our transit boats or commercial fishermen or, I mean, transit boats or our, you know, recreational customers.
You might have a little board.
There might be a little, you know, there is.
I think you have a few business guys that may shower every so often.
To say none, it would be wrong, but very, very few.
And the card system would identify anybody that uses, I mean, we'd have a name to each card, and anybody that swiped a card or whatever they did with Bob or whatever, it would say, Joe Smith used this card today. And so we would know who went in there at that time, mm-hmm. and we'd have a log.
Mm-hmm. And one of these systems was cheaper because we're not going to run Wi-Fi and, you know, be able to access it, you know, via Wi-Fi, but it does have a unit you go up to store and it will download the people, you know, the used card users to access. You know, once you have that information, I don't know how valuable it's going to be at what we can do, but you might.
Well, we can revoke their card. At the time and day of use, there was a problem there. We could revoke their card if we chose to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But would we know exactly what time the vandals happened? How could you say?
We have guys that check the bathrooms daily, so right. You would be able to. You would be able to eventually narrow it down probably with our cameras and names that we have. We just got to remember that when we do go down that path, it takes a lot of staff time to track down the vandals and people that are using, you know, security cameras and doing that. I'm not saying that we don't need the oversight, but it will take more time, staff time, to track down potential things when, you know, at the end of the day, you're never going to be able to prove that that's the guy that did it in the bathroom because
you don't know.
You're never going to be able to prove that.
Travis, do we have a camera that specifically looks at the outdoor entrance to that restroom?
No.
So what would it cost to put a camera there that looks at that entrance?
Probably $1,500.
Okay, so my thought would be before we do these card things or block up the wall, the cards are, I don't think, realistic. I mean, they're going to give us 50 cards, but how much is it going to cost to get a replacement card every time, you know, somebody loses theirs or says it gives it to somebody else or whatever?
In doing this, we would have to come up with a procedure about how this is done and if there's going to be any costs that are associated with the cards, that would be another conversation about this.
And I think staff time, as you mentioned, with the card system, I would rather personally put a camera in and let's watch, you know, that entrance, you know, set it across the parking lot on a pole so it can't be vandalized, see what's going on there before we get involved in a card system. That's my thought.
We have the cameras there and we have the infrastructure there, so adding the camera in that location is not hard.
I didn't say not on a rotation, have one very designated specifically
right.
to that restroom and who's coming and going.
Well, I remember the history of this going back a ways. The reason we have cameras here was because of that bathroom. That was the beginning of the discussion about security, was that bathroom. And because at the time that came up, we were having, at least there was an alleged prostitution operation going on in one of those bathrooms, plus the drug use, plus the homeless use. And we started this whole camera thing because of that. So we're now into that $40-some thousand, I think, plus the cost we've already incurred to put the C-lock system or the keypad on there. I think it's, I mean, just personally, I'm pissed.
Yeah.
At the amount of time, the amount of effort an entity like this port has to spend to deal with this kind of stuff. And I'll be honest with you, this to me is an artifact of, I mean, that particular bathroom is an artifact of the homeless process that this community has gone through, at least some parts of it, to utilize that bathroom for purposes for which it wasn't intended. And I think that's a pretty sad commentary, but enough of that. So, do you have a comment on?
Keep it as simple a solution as possible. Anybody wants to use the bathroom for a shower, they'll put a portal, get a key, and leave a deposit or something like that. But the camera on the front door, I don't think you're allowed to do. This was funded by the feds, and that was part of their stipulation. So my
recommendation would be that, from my perspective, we close the shower, and after talking to the State Marine Corps to ensure that there's no conditions that we're not aware of with that, but I think you remove the lure and attraction and see if that fixes the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears to me the showers are the problem, but I can't say that conclusively, but...
Yeah, Richard, you're right about that. And the other option, another shoe on the foot, is if you go with a flat card or a card, at least you can pin responsibility on, say, the captain of the boat that's been issued three or four of them, or this person's been issued a couple of them. At least the port can get responsible parties, narrow it down that much. If the showers don't happen, or if you don't close the showers.
I hear what you're saying, but my suspicion is that if we go down this road, what we're going to get is just one excuse or one issue after another, after another, after another with this process. And like I said, it infuriates me that we have to go to these kind of steps to deal with this. But at the same time, I'm tired of spending money on this place. I mean, we spent a lot of money trying to fix that over time, and it's not getting fixed. And it's a danger to employees. It's a danger to the court users. I just don't see continuing. I don't think it makes sense from my perspective.
It's the same thing over and over again. You have junkies sleeping in cars next to the bathroom.
Well,
nothing has changed for people.
I think, personally, I think the port has done as much as we could be reasonably expected to do to try and make this work. And somebody, somewhere, is bound and determined that that isn't going to cut it. So, like I say, I think if you remove the lure and attraction, go from there and see what happens. I mean, I hate making Fort Knox out of a bathroom. It doesn't make sense to me, but here we are, so.
So Travis, I have another question. In the packet of material I picked up this morning at the port, the SDAO is sponsoring cameras and locks, I believe, as part of their 50-50. So if we want to put a camera in, $700, $800 would be our cost. Is that correct, as far as you know?
I currently filled out the SDAO grant at 4 more cameras at our fuel dock. I'm utilizing that grant right now for what they have to offer. We're still waiting to hear back. If we want to add one more camera there, like I said, we just need to say, okay, that's what we need to do. But I think if we just lock the showers and it just turns this more into a progression of it's going to get worse and worse and worse until it gets shut down. I mean,
let's be realistic about a camera if we identify the person. And so what do we do next? The sheriff's office writes them a trespass notice?
And we're going to have to be careful about taking a camera's word of somebody walking into a bathroom and somebody walking out, and you have no proof that they did anything. And if you trespass people and they really didn't do something, and it's going to look really bad on our half.
Well, that's my point, is that even if we, in this particular instance, where what you're dealing with is relatively minor vandalism, even if you were to say this, we think this is the person, your chances of having any action of consequence is going to be pretty slim. And that's just the one that you caught, and you got to wait for the next repetition of this. I don't see that as a solution. I think that my personal view is the solution is block the bathrooms off and be done with it.
And check the state grand jury.
Well, we have to, I mean, that's a preliminary step.
Well, can we close the bathroom totally, completely, just lock it, not let people use it?
Not due to the parking lot.
So it has to stay open in some way, shape?
Some way, shape, or form.
It has to stay open.
There has to be bathrooms for parking spots.
Well, I'm not opposed to closing the shower. By any means, it seems to be the common denominator in all this. My only question is why hasn't, with that pen pad on that bathroom, and I'm not even going to go into the discussion of it being so freely passed about, it appears, why hasn't it impacted the other bathrooms that are open access, such as the one over here at the launch ramp, or the other side of the commercial basin, or this one right here beside the office?
No showers.
No showers. I understand there's no showers, but I'm saying, with that one being locked, you would think that,
I think a very real possibility that will move the problem. I'm not going to say this is going to solve it, but it'll certainly solve the shower end of it. But I'm not sure we're going to end vandalism or not move it someplace else, just out of retribution, if nothing else.
So one thing with our bathrooms, all of our bathrooms are locked at 10 o'clock.
Right.
They're locked. That bathroom, my guess is every time it's being vandalized between the hours of 10 and 4. So
there's less public over there. There's no less people to view what they're doing, who's going in. It's more isolated.
So with it being, we actually have a person coming and going through all the other bathrooms, looking at them and then physically locking them for no access, versus they still do look in that bathroom, but they look and then they leave, and it's not hard to figure out their schedule, and that's when it's happening between then. And the reason it's open 24 hours and we've gone to the pin pad is so the intended users, which I do get quite a few calls of our local fishermen wanting the code at night when they come back in. So that's why we went to the pin pads for access for that bathroom. But the rest of them actually have a person locking them and keeping people out. So that's just the difference with the other bathrooms about maybe the problem won't spread quite as much as we think because they're actually under lock and key at times.
What about going back to just locking it at 10 o'clock with the rest of them and the few people that want to shower?
It's not so much the showers as it is every other bathroom's locked, and especially crab season, shrimp season, when these guys come in, they're moving all night long, and they do use that bathroom because the other ones are locked.
Right.
Jay John, after 10 o'clock. So if somebody want to tee this up in a motion, you want me to?
There is always the option that you just do nothing and you continue going.
That's not an option.
Might be something similar to yours, Richard.
Chris, what about locking the bathroom or the shower up so that no one can get into it? And then give those who have moorage in the basin, such as the commercials that are using it, a key to the door. That's what Bodega Bay does, that you actually get a key. You get a key. You don't get one for everybody on the boat. You get one key. It's issued to the captain. That way, when the commercial fleet, if they're the ones that come in and want to use it, they've got a key, and they have to give it to their deckhand or whoever's going to the bathroom. And that's it. So they can use that bathroom after hours.
There is kind of what the Crescent City method is, that they have one key to their showers. If you want it, you go to their office. You sign your name. Whatever they have you sign, they give you the key, and you bring it directly back to the office. You know, you can have one at the fuel dock and one at our office that unlocks a chain link. A door's not going to work because they've proven to kick that in, but it'd be a chain link gate with one key at our office that's only basically handed out, unfortunately, during business hours, and they would have to bring the key directly back.
If they have to give you a deposit, too.
Deposits for us, keeping deposits in envelopes or it's stuck around anywhere, it, for accounting wise, it's a nightmare.
You're right. You simplify the whole thing, seal it off.
So
I'm talking about leaving the bathroom, seal off the register or the shower and leave the bathroom by key.
So how much is it going to cost us to put in a gate with a key on it? You're not talking a chain and a padlock. You're talking a regular lock on a chain link gate, right?
Yeah, right, where that I cover the whole thing with a chain link gate, kind of okay. Like a prison door.
Any idea what that would cost?
I think two chain link gates and installing them with locks would be under $1,000. That's a doable thing. It's just a lot of quarters to make back for the gate. It's not that expensive compared to anything else we're looking at.
Everything we spend over there is deficit spending.
Yeah.
Okay. Time.
Okay, time.
All right, I'll make a motion that we ask staff to equip the showers at the commercial boat basin with a chain link lockable gate, and that key for that gate be available at the office during regular business hours, and a key at the fuel dock be provided, one key, and has to be returned after each use.
And the rest of the doors open still by the
rest of the doors open by the keypad.
Explain that again to me. The doors open by the keypad.
So we're going to leave the keypad on the doors to get in and out of the bathroom. We're going to put a gate on the showers with one key available at the office, one key available at the fuel dock, and that'll be checked out as needed during regular business hours or whenever the fuel dock's in operation.
So was that just
for in Crescent City, where you mentioned that happened, was that for the showers, or was that just, or was it for the restroom as well? The restrooms are open, right?
Yeah, it's just for the showers.
So now we're going to have everything closed.
Well, the keypad will still stay the same for the bathroom access.
Right, but you still got to go to the port office.
If you would like to take a shower.
And hurry.
No, not the restroom. The restroom will still be the keypad.
Are you going to get through the gate?
No, there's two different doors. When you walk into to the women's side, the first door to your right goes to the bathroom.
Inside.
The second door goes to the showers.
Okay, I was thinking, I had a visual.
No. No, the two doors are located inside.
That makes sense. Thank you very much.
So if the keys do not work, that situation doesn't work. We'll just lock the gate there, nobody will get in.
Yeah, it'll just be locked until somebody comes to the office and says, I need to use the shower, and it'll be checked out to that person, and they'll have to
That part of it I don't think is going to work out very well, but...
And chain it to the ceiling.
We'll see.
No problem.
They're not getting, they won't get through it.
Okay.
If we have a motion on the table, we need a second or not?
Well, I'll second it.
Okay. Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
No.
Richard.
Yeah. Well, Joe, for your comfort, if there is any, this is my intent, this is the last time we're talking about this.
Yeah.
If it comes up again, it's going to have a cinder block.
Fire blocks. I'll put it up. It's taking me about an hour. I did all that block work in those bedrooms about 25 years ago, so it won't take me long to do it.
Oh, just stop it. It'll be nice.
Okay. That brings us to the RV park main waterline change orders number 3 and 4. And that is in front of you. Here.
So as this project is progressing, we're finding more and more little issues as far as the water line is concerned. We have in the past had to dig up the water line that goes through there and it's crushed and broke. It is a Schedule 40 line that's down there. The sand and things that are built up on it has a lot of couplings in it. So these change orders will replace the entire front row water line. We also currently don't have any shutoffs throughout the whole park. If something goes down, we have to shut the entire park off. Included in this, we'll have a shutoff that's every 5 or 6 sites across the front row, and I don't know why they did 2, but the second change order, number 4, is for putting in lines to connect the front and back row in 3 different places crossing the current row. So in the event we do have breaks or anything, we can start isolating the spots without shutting down the entire park. We're creating loops is what we're doing. The two different price quotes are Schedule 40 versus Schedule 80. Schedule 80 is just the only way to go for the longevity that we're looking for. This isn't something that was in our original bid package. The original bid package had the contractors tying in after our shutoffs that we have right now, the 2-inch line, we have a 3/4-inch PVC line that comes to a shutoff. They were going to keep all of that old stuff and tie in after the shutoff and run that 3/4-inch poly pipe to the pedestals. So if we do that, it's going to take our mess and spread it out too, versus a new water line that can be put in line with the rest of the new utilities that we're putting in and loop directly to the pedestals.
So Travis, if you use the Schedule 80 in the bathroom, we have 40 in those, don't we?
There won't be no bathrooms, just the main
water.
No,
but the pressure in the 80 is
greater than 40. So is that, would that create a problem with the 40 that's in the bathroom already?
No, well, the pressure is not going to stay the same. Yes. The pressure will stay the
same. The main advantage of ADN is much less likely to crush, particularly.
It's a much thicker pipe that is going to last. It seems that to crushing, bending, anything like that, it's a better material just to hot burn.
So change order then would put the new Schedule 80 line down the front with three legs going over to just hook into the existing Schedule 40 in the back?
Yes. And put shut off and then to the back roads where we, yes.
So we'll be able to isolate it.
And by doing this too, inside this number, we won't have our old PVC shutoffs that we have now. These will be all new brass shutoffs that'll be ran to all of it. It'll redo the entire water system instead of just tying into the old.
So the cost here.
So the cost.
Looking at change order four,
it will be,
which is more, right? That's the one.
Change order three is for the main water line across the front row and getting them hooked to the new pedestal.
Also,
change order number four will allow us to tie in across the road in three different places to create loops. They should have been included together, but I asked them at two different times for these quotes, so they made a change order three and then change order four.
So if we approve both of these, it looks like it's about a $46,000 change, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Ready for a motion?
$45,354.26.
That's to replace 240 linear feet of Schedule 80 pipe, correct?
240 linear feet on the back. That's 240 linear feet just to go across right there. The front one, the whole front row, all 1,000 plus feet in the front row.
Is there going to be any issues getting a hold of Schedule 80? Because you probably already, well, we don't have any pipe on hand for this, do we?
We don't have any pipe on hand. You'll see in the change order that I asked them to return the three-quarter inch stuff that they have already. So that credits $2,011. So we'll return everything we can and then get this new availability on it. I haven't heard that there's a problem getting it. Let's put it that way.
And this goes all the way down to the new sites that we're reading.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it seems logical to me. If we got all the equipment out there and we're digging all this stuff up, that this is the time to do this and make that improvement. I think that's only logical. Just a little more money than we have budgeted.
It's more money than we have budgeted. So I did talk with Kim about kind of where this money's coming from,
right.
And it will be, it'll come out of contingency, which what we have budgeted $170,000. So that's where, out of our budget, where it's going to be coming from is out of contingency. I thought about taking it out of repairs and maintenance, but I don't really want to touch that if we don't have to.
It fits contingency better.
Contingency if
it's a lot better. Yes.
And we really don't know exactly where we're at the cost on that remodel of the RV park, are we? I mean, now we've got this added on, and I think the job is run over more than it will.
Yeah.
So
every time we add to it, it's running farther over. How far total we are right now?
Yeah. You know?
Well, I know after our engineering, we're probably coming up on
$800,000. Okay. We had
$750, we put $100, and we did a first change order that was $30, so maybe $850 with this. You know, the first change order we had to do coming across the kite field, that is done, and they got the lines ran over for that, so that was our first change order that was kind of unforeseen that we had to do too. This is, it's a lot of money, but I think if we're going through the effort of spending the money we have, we need to ensure that we're not going back to digging up a site because the water line broke because we decided not to change it. And that's my opinion.
I think any improvement for that RV park is well worth it.
So, Travis, I have two change order numbers three. The amount on one is for the Schedule 80 is $26,431.18. The other one is $29,670.81. You're recommending the $29,000. Is that correct?
Yes. So the one I sent out in the packet that I got from her, I talked to McLennan today, and that original one I gave you in your packet did not include the two-inch shutoff for the site. So I dumped the guy. I gave you guys the wrong information. That's why in this one that I gave you that's stapled together.
Yep.
This is the current change order number three. And then the one behind it for the laterals going through for the $15,000 is change order number four. Combining together, at the $45,000.
So our motion here today then needs to include change order three and four.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
So I'm ready to make a motion, but do you want them as separate motions for what change order three or?
No, I think you can do them both together and then just specify the pipe you want.
Okay. Is everybody ready for a motion?
Sure.
I'll make a motion. McLennan Excavation Inc.'s proposal for change of additional work performed on the RV park. Motion or option two on change order three of $29,670.81 and change orders four for the amount of $15,683.45 be approved.
I second it.
Okay. You guys got that? Okay. Okay, we have a motion and second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay. That brings us to the information item. Yeah.
We tabled this last time because we didn't have all the commissioners here, so I know the events have been kind of over for a while, but given the ones we had over the summer, if there's any type of discussions or things that we want to see improve or see any type of changes before the next events come, this is our first opportunity to talk about it.
I'll discuss Pirates of the Caribbean. Pirates, if they can't comply with our regulations regarding keeping the access open against the rail, then they don't need to come back. And I can show you all sorts of pictures if you like.
From my perspective and looking at the events that I attended down here, probably the one that is usually the biggest issue was Pirates. And it's mainly just because of its popularity and the amount of people that show up here. There are a multitude of things that we should talk about, probably including the sheriff. I mean, parking on the road is an issue. Parking, period, is an issue that I think we need to get a better handle on. And I think that's up to the operator. We should have some discussions with them about, okay, folks, it's going to have to get fixed. And I think they're going to have some attendance out on the parking lot to make sure people don't park where they shouldn't.
Yeah.
I realize that trying to use that boat wharf during the pirates is problematic anyway, but it's especially bad when they come to the end of the marked parking places and just keep parking. And I happened to be unfortunate enough to think I could go in there one time and found out I couldn't, and then I couldn't get out. So anyway, I think that we should have some discussions with Bruce Ellis before next year about some of these issues. That's the only one that I'm aware of that's really got a lot of baggage with it.
Yeah, the parking, they parked in the rocks everywhere.
The previous event the week before the Pirates was the Art in the Port.
Right.
And that was extremely well coordinated by the management of that event. And they do not have near the traffic, foot traffic, that the Pirates did. And the Pirates can be a very good asset to the port, I think. But they definitely need some better coordination with us as to what they can and can't do and their vendors.
Well, like I say, I think Pirates have gotten to the point where it's going to have to be managed on a basis beyond the port. I mean, I noticed that this bike lane all the way down the road was full of cars. I don't know what the legal ramifications of that are, but 4th of July, from at least my experience, was it went pretty well this year. There weren't a lot of issues, and things seemed to go pretty smoothly, other than the accident. But as far as the general conduct of the whole thing, I thought it went pretty well.
Can I ask something? Being a participant for the Pirates Festival, one subject did come up. If they had the potties, the porta potties that they have there, if you can ask them to please drain those things daily instead of using it for 3 days in a row.
Okay.
Jesus, Saturday, prime time, that place is reeked. You know, it was a battle between the bathrooms and some guy barbecuing and trenches. You know, so
yeah.
I think it's an easy task. I think you can go ahead and have some drain those things daily.
That's up to the leafy, isn't it? Provide porta potties and get them clean?
Well, it is, but it's not out of the question if it's becoming a issue for the patrons being here. We can surely say they can, CPR will happily come clean them daily.
Yeah.
Their events don't start usually till 9, 10 o'clock. CTR is well out and around by that time to where it can be done. And probably with that many people, should be done.
Maybe they need more.
More?
It's not sufficient.
Well, those are all things we can talk to the organizers about and you know, say, look, here's some issues that we'd like to see how you're going to address them and see what they want to do, basically. Okay, anything else on events? All right. Port manager update and special meeting schedule. We have that here. So it looks like the month of November will be mostly about the new port manager.
Yes. So I'm trying to nail down the dates that you guys will be reviewing the applicant packages and the date you guys will be holding interviews, given what you choose on the 4th, at the first meeting. I already have Terry kind of set into November 4th and the 18th. If we can hold to those dates, that would be great. If there's any major conflicts with commissioners, we can change it, but as far as the schedule, the timeline, and the process of this, we need to try and hold firm to these dates. Both these dates, Terry, with SDAO, will be here to answer questions. She'll travel here and be here with us in person. So as long as that those two dates are okay, November 4th and the 18th, they'll both be executive sessions. The 18th one, when we hold interviews, you see the kind of the potential day laid out. If there's four candidates, each candidate will basically have something to do throughout the day. The staff will have three people from the staff to interview, the commission will interview, and then I was going to do the court tour with them. So that kind of gets everybody that needs to be involved with it, involved with it.
So you're saying that when we're interviewing these people, it will be both the board and the staff together?
No, so at 8 a.m., candidate number one will have an interview with the board. At 8 a.m., candidate number two will have an interview with the staff. And at 8 a.m., one of the candidates will have a port tour, and the fourth one will actually, that will be open. And then at 9 o'clock, all of them will switch, and then at 10 o'clock they'll switch and be done with the interviews potentially by noon. We'll eat lunch, and then we'll come back and go over the next steps about selecting one of them if we choose.
Is that the executive or
the discussion over the interviews will still be an executive session.
Right.
I'm going to have to ask Terry, and she's going to answer a lot of those questions on the 4th.
Okay.
I know for us, when we select one, we will have to come. It's just a discussion, an executive session. You'll select one or get a... Everybody will get a consensus of what they want. You'll come back into the regular meeting, and then you'll actually have a vote.
Right. We'll probably develop a rank order list in executive session and then come back and take action on that list in regular session.
Yeah, and that's why Terry's going to be here to help facilitate the process. I think we all have a pretty good idea what's going to happen, but she's going to make sure we do it right.
So the question, though, that is also posed on this is, are we going to entertain paying their expenses to come for the interview? So that would include paying a reasonable amount for mileage or airfare, depending on where they're coming from, meals, lodging, and back to their destination.
Yeah, this, the way I've understood it, is pretty broad. However we want to do or to offer. This is, I guess probably maybe should have been an action item, but we can probably do that on the 4th. We'll probably make this, and can we still make this into an action item?
No, I don't think so now.
All right.
But
well,
we're going to have a meeting on the 4th. We can go in a regular session, go to executive session, come back and take action on whatever we decide there, and we could resolve that at that
time. So I guess the right question on this would be, do we want to look at what our options are for providing some sort of compensation for the interviewees? So it sounds like there's at least two maybe that are from out of state. I don't know if that means California or, you know, somewhere else, but how far it is, but you can just say each person being interviewed can have this dollar amount to do whatever, you know, instead of trying to track down that, or we can just say no, you know, altogether. It would probably
be good for us to get the advice from SCAO as to what is the most practical way to do that. And that'll be on the 4th, right? Once you come. Because I don't know what's customary on these things.
Okay. I'll see if she has any recommendations for us to look at how to do that.
Okay.
Why are we entertaining compensation for interviews? I have yet to see any job that provides compensation for an interview for a position.
No,
any civil service. I have never seen one. When I interviewed for the state of California, that was all on me to drive to Sacramento and take the test the three times that I had to go down there.
We're not covered by civil service rules, but I'm just curious what the general practice is among the special districts when they're interviewing candidates. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm with you. I've never gotten paid to go to an interview out of state, but then again, I was working for the government, so. But she can give us some guidance on that, I'm assuming.
I have seen executive positions get paid to interview in a government setting, and I would consider this an executive position.
Well, I think the question that I would ask her is, do we limit our opportunity to recruit people if we're going to require them to come from Wisconsin, for example, to, on their own dime, to take an interview in Brookings, Oregon? I don't know. But
well,
I think she could probably give us some
ideas. I'll figure out what it is, because we don't want to pay mileage on somebody coming from Wisconsin either.
No,
or
New York. You pay airfare or something like that. So, yeah, see, just we can see what she has to say about that. And then take action on that at, in regular session on the 4th.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else on this?
No.
No, I will. So for the November 4th meeting, I should have the packets that SCAO will provide you of the candidates the 26th or the 27th of this month, sometime next week. So I'm still planning on trying to get you guys that packet out a week before with all this information on it. So when we have our November 4th meeting, you guys will at least have a good feel from reading what the candidates are versus trying to just do them.
Yeah.
I'm good with those dates, Travis.
And I would remind everybody, when we talked to SBAO about this, they were very adamant about confidentiality.
Right.
So when you get those packets, that's confidential information to you. And, you know, it's not that we're trying to hide candidates from anybody, but there are concerns about candidates who may have applied that could have some repercussions if somebody found out they applied, those kind of things. So.
Yeah, they are confidential, and they will come in confidential packet. Don't share it with anybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. OPBA conference.
So we just wanted, so that was September 29th and 30th. Myself, Danielle, and Ken attended it. It was a good meeting. See a lot of faces. They talk about a lot of bills that are upcoming that are relevant to ports, problems that are shared amongst ports. Some of the big ones that hit were abandoned derelict vessels, wastewater treatment plant, water quality standards, and permitting. That was all ports go through the same thing. They all struggle with permitting. Abandoned derelict vessels are shared amongst all ports. There is a lot more action going on as far as funding for them. It sounds like Department of State Lands originally asked for $40 million, but it looks like the bill that's getting rose for $10 million to start developing programs and funds to start removing these things from the water. So there's still a lot of work to go, but it's finally becoming a big enough topic that our state legislators and powers to be are coming up with funding ways for ports to be able to deal with this. One of the things that I did bring up too that a lot of ports have the problem too is accepting stormwater from highways, counties, non-port generated stormwater and the accumulations that happen at other ports and that being on the port's expense to be removed. So,
are they making any headway with that?
It was kind of a new thing that I recently talked to some people about, and it got brought up. David Rocksmith, and he brought it up in the meeting, which I was surprised at how many people are like, yeah. And so, it's kind of like the very beginning with the abandoned derelict vessels. I think it's a very large problem and a hard one to tackle, but. You know, these are kind of the opportunities when we go to those meetings to talk about what your problems are and to start bringing relevance with other ports and creating kind of a group that is experiencing the same problems. In the packet, I put the attendees who were in there. That's about it. It was a lot of driving for a five-hour meeting, but they go over a lot of information and give you access to talk, you know, put faces with names that you talk with in Department of State Lands or in State Marine Boards, which help as well.
Networking is great.
Do you have any idea what the schedule for the SBAO meeting is in the spring?
I think it's February. It's February again, and it's Sun River again.
Yeah, it's in February in Sun River.
Okay.
That, it's a short stick on that one again. Maybe not for you.
Well, we all were. We had a couple of us got snowed in at Sun River last time we went.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that happens. I'm telling you right now, but... A little exciting coming home.
I think everybody kind of was a little shocked that they were going back to Sun River in the middle of winter, but it's very central in the scope of special districts to come.
Okay, boatyard clam shelling.
Okay, so the accumulation at the travel lift continues to get worse. Low tide is pretty well out of the question. I had one boat that was leaking some, not an emergency, but he needed to come out, and we backed him in there, and he was on the bottom. Well, he sat there for 4 hours waiting for the tide to come back up enough to get him out. In an emergency situation, if it comes at low tide with we're going to be pumping on a boat. We're waiting for water. We still have the ability to do our haul out 2 or 3 hours, plus or minus a high tide, but it is becoming a bigger situation. So I went and I got quotes. So I had the pile removed from the last bit of clam shelling we did. It was roughly 260, almost 300 yards. That was hauled off by Tidewater at $10 a yard. We're looking right now at 3,000 to 5,000 yards that are in there, probably three. Our permit that we're trying to get right now is 3,000 to 5,000 yards to get removed. These quotes that I put in front of you guys are for 5,000 cubic yards to be removed. Now that's removed from the water, not removed from port property. There still will be additional haul off costs. On an average, it's about $10 a yard to haul off here. So the quotes that you see, 206,000, 202,000, 145,000. Most of these numbers come, they're in the mobilization cost to get here. Billiter did come in the cheapest. With it being based on 5,000 yards, if and when we pick one of these, I think we'll refine our cubic yardage with them a little bit more, but 5,000 was just the number we put out to get our quotes. I have been looking into with our attorney about, is this the port's responsibility? We're still looking into, I'm still gathering information for them, but it might be a good idea for us just to hang on to these and let legal counsel go through this a little more and provide us with some more guidance about any potential avenues we have to go with this other than this money coming directly out of our pocket. We've historically been paying for this, and I think it's due time that we let our legal counsel look at this to establish what the future of this dredging this pile is going to be for the port. But this was the information items to kind of get you guys an idea of what that number is looking like. You know, if it is 5,000 yards that we have taken out, it'll probably cost us another $50,000 to have it hauled off, and we're probably $5,000 to $10,000 in engineering for permits. And control measures that will be on the port for dewatering. So it's a large project that's going to cost us a little bit of money. The good thing right now is that I think we have time. I don't think we have to make this decision right now. We have time for our legal to get us some better guidance on where we stand with this. But this would be another project where we don't have it budgeted. This money would probably fall from the remaining what we have left of our contingency that we had budgeted. But I think we should let legal spend a little time on this and get us some more information.
Well, there's also the issue of lost revenue for the slips that we can't use. And I, you know, this is the county we're talking about. So Susan Curry County, I don't know, you know, that's probably not a very good option, but I'm not sure that that may not be somewhere in the cards down the road.
I think that depending on what our legal comes up with, if they think that we have some good talking points to go back to the county with and say, you know, have a little more on our side about where we're going to go with this if we don't receive help, and just kind of give them a last-ditch effort to see if they're willing to meet us halfway with it. Or, you know, it's really going to depend on what our legal says and what they find out, because the county is the next person above us, but everyone that's attached to that drainage ditch, including ODOT and all the way up the hill, in some way could be considered as contributors. So we just need legal to identify those for us.
So what year was it that we had that map done?
2000.
7 years?
Has it been that long? 5, 17, 18, something like that, we were done. And
now we're going to be doing it again, and then you'll...
We've done it three times in my 12 years of being here. We've done it three times. And it has been a problem. I know they've been dealing with this and talking about it since 2009. And it's going to continue to be a problem.
Well, I rather suspect that what our council is going to tell us is that we are going to sit down with Curry County and work this out, because even if we want to... a lawsuit, I suspect the resolution would be a negotiated settlement with an arbitrator on a government-to-government sort of thing like this. So we could save ourselves a lot of legal expense by not suing each other and just sit down and figure it out. But again, it's going to be dependent on what Curry County can do for it. So.
Are they cleaning that trap over at the hotel there?
I'm not exactly sure what their schedule is on cleaning that trap. It's not on port property, and it's not ours, and, you know, it's not our responsibility to let them know. I'm not sure what their schedule is.
Visual evidence would indicate no,
yeah.
or at least not often enough.
Well, shouldn't we find out how often they clean it?
You'd have to talk to the roadmaster about it. Like I said,
information that we can get.
We've had a board-to-board meeting with them, and they haven't presented us with any type of schedule or regular schedule that they do it. They have asked that the court let them know if it gets full, but we have declined that to do that for them every time, because we're not those guys to tell you when your catch basin needs to be.
Well, tell them to pull every damn month and see what the heck they say. I'm tired of this BS.
Well, we have had some pretty intense discussions with them, and so the question is, what's the legal ramifications?
Right.
Because water does flow downhill. These are natural drainages. So at some point, the port's going to receive that material anyway. So one of the questions we asked the attorney, which he's researching now, is what are the legal rules in Oregon about outfall? I mean, where do we stand on that? Are we subject to being responsible for everybody else, which I don't think we are, but if not, then what's the consequence? And that's kind of where we are right now. And we have two issues here, really. We have the dredging, which we're going to have to do, period, because we need to get the port cleaned up. The other issue is who's going to pay for it.
Well,
And that's what the attorneys are trying to help us figure out at this point, correct?
Yep.
Travis, to absorb some of the costs and hauling some of that crap shell stuff away, does anyone propose that you pump it out into Port Salem Beach?
Our material is not, it's too much silt, which does not meet the qualifications for beach nourishment. Mm. Not sandy enough. It doesn't. We have looked into it because there's, obviously that is a method that's used, but our materials that settle in here, the sand and sediment out here does not qualify or meet to be able to put on land or on a beach for beach nourishment.
Well, if it's going to eliminate some zeros from the fill, it's so ticky-tacky. If your problem is where you live both out of the water, maybe you can do a square footage and have that soil tested to see if that.
Permitting requirements to do that.
Exactly. Then you have to get a permit to put it on there, and every avenue has a caveat somewhere of what you can and can't do. And putting it on the beach, we have explored. We haven't gone back into it since the tsunami, but the material we have is not suitable to be put on the beach.
So Travis, going to the future with the FEMA project, and we eventually get our dredge, we'll be able to maintain that a little better then, right?
We'll be able to maintain it a little better. Part of the problem that we're having with the material that is some of these rocks are
too big for
are big rocks, which can be handled, you know, via clamshelling at a more controlled basis. Yes, our dredge will definitely help, but just because we have a dredge and now have the ability to get it out does not mean that it's still on our dime all the time I think it will handle 90% of the material that will come out of that.
So Travis, Legacy Contracting is also one of the bidders on the FEMA projects, are they not?
We haven't done any bids on the FEMA project. Billiter Marine, so Legacy Contractors, they were the ones that just did the fuel dock work.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They were just here and did the fuel dock, the piling, and the rebuild of that.
It is realistic, though, that they would be bidding on the FEMA projects. They'd bid on every other project we've had.
It would be realistic to think that, yeah.
So how far out is that FEMA project where we're going to be doing any work that, if they were the bidder, that they would be mobilizing the equipment down here?
I'm really hesitant to give updates on FEMA roughly.
Next year.
I think that this pile, depending on our winter, could get very out of control before we see any contractors here for FEMA work. Next month, I'm hoping to give you guys an update of where we are with FEMA. It's still a disaster. It's getting better, but it's just still spreading. So hopefully I will have an update of where we are at with that next month.
Thank you.
Okay. Should we add an E in here?
I don't.
No.
Okay, that concludes the agenda, except for Commissioner's comment.
I'm glad to see that your park is just moving.
Yeah, I would make a comment. I got a rather, how can I put this nicely? I got my pants pressed pretty good about the partial stickers we're issuing to the six packs, and it does not include the boat launch. The person that contacted me was not very happy about that and says, I don't understand your logic. You moor your boat in the harbor, you get a launch or parking pass, and your launch and retrieval is included as part of your fee. So if you're charging us $300 to just use your port as a commercial basis, why don't we at least get the launch fee?
That's a good idea.
That was their comment, so I just mentioned that.
but they need to start buying that $300. All the boats I've been watching out there, they're not.
We have discussed this in terms of enforcement and stepping it up, and I think we agreed that we've got enough on our plate right now, so this is the first go-around. Let's work on this, and we'll step up enforcement and notification next year so we don't overload.
Yeah, I counted one day, eight guide boats out in that river.
Yep.
That didn't pay it, but like I said, this. We need to refine our enforcement on it because I wasn't going to go knock down eight guys' doors that day. But, you know, the intended purpose of that is really good. The launch fee, we might want to look at with that. But the services that we're providing for them to be able to run that business, especially via fish cleaning station, is astronomical.
This person had absolutely no concern about it. They understood the logic and the rationale for it, and because they're local, they're actually happy about it. They just didn't get the launch fee part. Their comment to me was that, so the net effect of this is, because the State Marine Board will not regulate guides. They don't regulate guides. They license them, but they will not limit them or limit their operation. So this person said, well, at least this will give people from Portland who come down for the bubble season at least a minute to think about whether they want to spend $300 to come down here and fish for 4 days, those kind of things. So,
on that note, why don't you, for those that purchase again next year, as a reward to them, give them and make it an incentive every year if you buy the $300 sticker, then we'll waive your fees for the year. If you don't buy it, you got to pay the launch fees. Make it an incentive to them.
Well, the bottom line is, from my perspective, if they don't buy it and they're using port facilities for a commercial purpose, we'll trespass them and they won't be here. I mean, that's the tail end of that discussion.
Incentive. That way, if they want to come back, they renew that permit every year.
Well, I think we just need to be specifically clear when we talk about it again what's included with that $300 and what the intent was. So,
Jeff, the eight commercial boats you saw counted out there, there's 5 days a week, 2 months straight, they're out there. So it might have been worth the shake and bounce. That's what I'm going to say.
I mean, to be honest with you, $300 is 1 day guiding. One, two people. Basically, so. And I won't even go into the.
And they're slamming the salmon, too.
I won't talk about that. But.
Yeah.
Okay, any other comments? Next regular meeting. Go ahead.
Has anybody said anything, you guys, about the quality of the being able to listen to your meetings on the internet or to this? I've had two people tell me that they've tried to listen to your damn meetings, and if you go along, you listen to something, you get interested in it, and that stops and breaks up. And they can't follow along, and they're having a difficult time being able to hear how your recordings are brought back to the phone or to be able to watch on the internet. So never been brought up.
That's a byproduct of Zoom or whatever medium you're using. I mean, I've attended, I guess since the pandemic, somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 plus meetings on the computer, and they're all like that. It's a constant problem for in an arena like this to make sure that everybody can hear what you're saying and that the connection stays the same. I mean, the Pacific Council spent, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $90,000 buying things that are called OWLs. And so this OWL is a speaker with cameras on it that they would sit on that table, and it's supposed to pick up people that are speaking, and then when you speak, the camera looks at you. So if you're online on your computer, you can see that. Well, we ran those for 10 days, and it was a complete and total failure. Because the more stuff you add, the more bandwidth the system requires to make it operate. And if you're sitting at home with an underpowered computer or something that doesn't work well, then you're kind of out of luck. And I hear you, but I don't know what you can do about it. We're subject to the providers. And
right. How long ago was that?
Yeah, that was last month.
It was last month that
you
tried to listen?
Yeah, about a month and a half ago. It was brought to me. Two other people brought it up, said, I tried to listen to it, and they just said it was all messed up.
So there was a point we replaced that, and it was almost 6 months ago, because we had those exact same comments and concerns. We'll look back into it, but I just wonder how long ago it's, because we haven't had any issues with it. But we did not too long ago. You know, I think it was 6 months ago we had to replace that because we were having that exact same issue. So we'll relook at it and see how it is. I know we have some of the girls on the office. They listen to it too, just to help us know that it's getting out there. But
yeah, transcribe that.
Just call and just if they do have those. Those are important for us to know so we can. So we.
Well, any place they could come and listen to it then? Sit down in your office maybe and listen to it?
If somebody is having.
Is that a possibility?
They can come. I will make that a possibility if they so need it. They just need to schedule it with me so I can help
talk
them
to you guys, you know?
The best that I can attend the meeting.
Yeah.
However, I can help them, yes.
Yeah, so I said to them, attend the meeting, but they said, well. They couldn't get here, couldn't do this, couldn't do that. Okay. That's their comment to me.
Okay. Thank you.
Richard, can I say something for Travis? Hey, Travis, I think I brought it up to you a couple of weeks ago. I've had about a half a dozen people ask me about those handrails. Did I bring that up to you?
Mm-hmm.
And I know you had problems with people tearing them up. Whatever happened, I wasn't there. I don't use those docks. So is there a possibility we could probably get one set of handrails on just one finger, and if you have to, I'll beef them up. I don't even know what you got, what they look like, or anything else, but I'll be more than happy to beef them up, whatever it takes. Just for, you know, these guys are 85 years old. They asked me, you know, hey Joe, you think maybe you might be able to get those back for us?
You guys know what he's talking about?
Yeah, I could use them instead of rolling out.
As I remember, the South Coast fishermen bought them, and they had them fabricated and put up. They were aluminum,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of the problem, I think, was the aluminum, that they're not strong enough. And
well, it's not strong enough, but they're running them over.
Well,
they found them both, they hit them, they run them over. So every one that the South Coast fishermen bought to put on, I think every one of them got hit, and then we rewelded the bases. If that's something we want to look at, it's just Oregon State Marine Board provides these docks throughout the entire state. They are not engineered or designed to have any type of an accessible bar for people to get in and out. They have been told that, you know, there is accessible bars that can go on your boat that go out that you can hold on to get in and out of your boat. Before I say yes, let me look at it again, and maybe at our next meeting we'll discuss it and see if we want to invest the time to try and make more of like an accessible handicap type lane where we could put up, you know, just one side of the dock that would allow for it and try it again.
I'll be more happy to build if y'all have to or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we might talk to other ports too and see if they have anything like that. I'm trying to remember. I saw one someplace and I took a picture of it, but I can't.
I want to say Charleston, but I don't want to swear on that.
Yeah.
Let's start something right over here.
For what?
Handrail.
Where?
At the Coast Guard station.
Our Coast Guard station?
Mm-hmm.
Down on their docks?
Mm-hmm.
So they can get in and out of their boats?
That, if they have a small boat that they need to do that. But most of their boats, they can just jump off of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be happy to look more into what's out there. I know. I'll look into it.
I'm not trying to put more. No, we can look into it.
Like I said, we looked at it before, but maybe we should come up with some options and maybe set up one side of the dock that is ready for it and, you know, give them at least an option for a place to go.
When we did those rails before, the real problem isn't as much the boats bumping them as the people tying up off of them on the tops of them. And they're just not designed at the base where they're connecting to the dock for that kind of load that, you know, 2,000, 3,000 boat puts on those things.
Yeah, you're right. That was another contributor to it, that then they were tie-up rails. So let me just look and see what I could do.
Okay. Anything else? Our next regular meeting will be Wednesday, November 16th. Remember, we have the 4th and the 18th committed as well for manager recruitment interview.
Yep.
Okay, with that, we will adjourn.
Goodbye.
Just a thought, real quick. What about the pilots? They're metal, right? Why can't we just weld handles on the pilots?